So tonight, our encouragement talk is going to be given by one of our Boundless Way Zen senior Dharma teachers, also an ordained priest in Boundless Way Zen, and he has many other attributes as well. Our very own Bob Waldinger.
Can people hear me? Is this... Okay. So, I've been thinking a lot this week about something that a colleague said to me right before I came to Sisshin. She asked me what I was doing, and I told her I was going on a meditation retreat, and she said, "What a lovely way to spend the week." And then she looked at me, and quite sincerely, with admiration, she said, "You know, mindfulness is so fashionable now." So, okay, so here we are, deep in Sisshin, right? Like, I have not slept very much, I haven't shaved, my clothes are kind of funky, my mind is a mess, and I'm thinking, did I somehow miss the fashionable part? But of course, we see it everywhere. Mindfulness this and mindfulness that. And one of my friends, who's a Zen practitioner in New York, wrote a piece about this, about something he calls McMindfulness. about the sort of packaging of this panacea for everything that ails us. It'll, you know, cure dandruff, and it will certainly make you feel better and be handsomer and all that. And so I've sort of made a sport of looking for some things related to this. And you can go on Amazon, and there are books. There's a book called The Mindful Way to Investing. There's a book on mindful golf. And the one I like the best, you can buy mindful mayonnaise. You know, and there are so many self-help books and so many manuals and so many projects, and mindfulness will fix it all. And of course, I point my finger at those people and I say, "Oh, that's so superficial, and that's not what I do. I do Zen, and that's not me." And whenever I'm pointing my finger at somebody else with a lot of passion, those fingers pointing back at me are saying, "Wait a minute, buddy." And when I look at my practice, I realize that I spend a whole lot of time trying to do Zen, trying to fix myself, creating projects, creating programs, right there on the cushion. In fact, there are days on the cushion where I'm like the total McZen master. You know, I think about, like, you know, how am I doing on the koan curriculum? Am I moving through them okay? Was today a good zazen? And if not, do I need to sit a second time? And, you know, so many ways in which I measure myself and assume if I measure it and I do it right, I'll get somewhere. And yeah, I know there's nothing to attain and there's no place to get, but that's for other people. That's not for me. You know, and sometimes for me, these projects sneak up on me. Several weeks ago now, I was noticing my heartbeat in my morning sitting, and you know, I notice that sometimes, along with a lot of other things. And then I thought, oh, it's kind of slow and steady. And so when the bell rang at the end, I took my pulse. And I found that actually it was pretty slow and steady. And the next day after Zazen, I took my pulse again. And what I found was that I was creating a little ritual around it. And I was thinking, you know, if I get my pulse low, that means I'm healthy, I'm in good shape. And now, of course, Faye tells us that if you do that too much, you could wind up in somebody's freezer. You have to be careful. But what? And so I basically use the koan that I find is the great universal koan, which is, what is this? And when I really paid attention, I realized that I secretly believed that Zen was going to keep me healthy. That sickness, old age, death, well, old age is kind of happening, but maybe not sickness, maybe not even death. And even though it felt silly, it also felt very real. Barry Magid writes about this. He writes about what he calls our secret practices, the secret bargains that we make with Zen. If I do this, I'll be a better partner. If I do this practice well, I'll find a better partner. If I do this, I'll feel better about myself. I'll feel less lonely. And maybe when the time comes, I'll be less afraid of death. And he says that these secret practices are usually things that we come to Zen with. And of course, I can get very judgmental about those secret practices as well, but I've come to look on them differently now. Because really, first of all, they are it, like everything else, but there's so much we can learn from them, so much we can learn about the deepest longings of our hearts, wanting to find peace, wanting to find safety, wanting not to suffer. And we can learn some things about our fears too. Because when I'm really present and not doing, when I'm really just there for the arising and falling away of everything in each moment, the experience is liberation. But the idea of it can be terrifying. And in that terror, a mindfulness course that's 5 weeks long and gives a diploma at the end looks mighty tempting. What we want to do with these secret practices is invite them in out of the shadows. And Sesshin gives us a really good opportunity to see them, because it heightens everything, it intensifies everything. So we invite those secret practices in, nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to be pushed away, nothing left out. But to borrow a phrase from Joan Sutherland, she says, we invite them into our living room as welcome guests, but we don't give them permission to light a fire on the living room rug. We hold them lightly and we hold them lovingly. And in that way, we learn about what it is to have a heart and a mind and a life. Because those secret practices for me are going to come up as long as I'm alive. This beautiful practice of Zen is never going to be fashionable. It's never going to be hip. It's too hard. It's too deep. It requires too much bravery. But all those mindful panaceas and plans and manuals, they resonate. They resonate with us, with what we try to do. Please, let me make a bargain with practice. Please, let me be safe. Let me be peaceful. Let me not suffer. Let my mind not torture me. And what we can do is become intimate with the practices and with the longings the longings that fuel them and the longings that keep them arising. And that intimacy with our deepest longings, that's so much richer and so much more satisfying than mindful mayonnaise could ever be.